Ah, yes indeed. Welcome again to The Age Stage. Great to have your company. A program that looks at issues and matters affecting older Australians, made possible by the generous support of The Village Baxter, The Village Glen and Encore Living for that rural alternative. Welcome everyone, I'm Brendan Telfer and joining me in the studio again today is Paula Dunn. Paula, welcome.
Hi Brendan.
Good to have you back, Paula.
Good to be here.
The Age Stage today, Stuart and Peter joining us as well, top five things we need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also be having a chat to the RSPCA about pets and older people, a very, very important role that pets perform, and also Lucy Berry coming in from Animals Australia as well.
Good, because pets are really important.
Pets are important.
Yes.
We love pets.
Good for the nervous system.
Very good. Mm. And lowering blood pressure, which
Absolutely.
You were telling us all about last week, weren't you? So very, very important. But in the studio with us today, Paula, we have our regular guests.
Hi, Peter, and hi, Stuart.
Hi, Paula. Hi, yeah. Brendan.
Nice to see you again.
Good morning. My pet's at home. Her name is Estelle, and she's gorgeous, really.
Oh, my heavens. Estelle, if you're listening.
Hello, Estelle. Beautiful.
A totally unexpected introduction to the show.
Left field. Mr. Nilsson does it again.
Yeah. He does. He's very debonair, very suave.
He
isn't he?
Welcome, guys. So the top five things we need to know when considering moving into government-funded aged care services. Stuart, I know that this is close to your heart, so maybe we get you to launch off into this one.
Look, moving into aged care, any government-funded service is interesting in the modern era. Long gone are the days where governments provided everything for people. You are no longer automatically entitled to a pension. You're no longer automatically entitled to free health service if you've got the capacity to pay. And aged care is no different. And there are a number of traps and pitfalls that people need to know and understand so they can adequately plan for the future. And certainly Peter would have the same issues at Village Glen of a lack of planning and foresight and trying to guide people through the maze. So we thought the top five things would be something that the listeners could benefit from, and we could hopefully spread that word throughout the broader community. Peter, what's number one?
I think number one would be the process, because aged care facilities have waiting lists, etc., and people, particularly for the government-funded one, the government needs to have some system to make sure that those people who get a place are entitled to it on a needs basis. So there is the aged care assessment process, Stuart. That's number one, I think.
I've heard of that name.
ACAP.
How does that work?
Yes.
Tell me, how does that work, Peter?
Are you setting me up, Stuart?
No.
No?
No,
I'm not. You're edifying the audience, Mr. Nilsson.
Okay, ACAP. So, as I said before, everyone who goes into residential aged care that is government funded needs to be assessed on a needs basis to get a place. And the way they do that is the government many years ago decided to appoint regional hospitals as their agents to do that assessment. And they call them ACAT teams, aged care assessment teams. And they are parts of hospitals right across Australia. So for people to get into residential aged care that's funded by the government, the local ACAT needs to assess them. Now, in this area, it's part of Peninsula Health, and they call themselves MECAS, which is the Mount Eliza Centre Aged Care Assessment.
As we would all know, it's just down the road.
Yes. Mm. So in this region, it's MECAS. I won't go into the My Aged Care side of that just yet. So MECAS are a team of gerontologists, social workers and
physios,
nurses.
They're multi-dimensional.
And one of their roles is, by application of individuals, they will come to your home and have an interview with you. And because they're expert in the field, they will assess your needs as you are at home and, look at what risks you are at. And from that, they will prepare a report. And they might assess you as requiring respite. And if you get a respite assessment, you're entitled to 63 days per annum in an aged care facility of your choice. And typically people take 2 or 3 week blocks of that. And what that's all about...
Sorry, Peter, can they... They do come to a hospital facility and assess you too.
No. Well, they can.
They can. They did with my father, actually.
Yeah. It's always better to have it at home, Paul. Because you can see people in their usual environment.
Yeah.
Well, the hospital's not usual.
The hospital told us that he couldn't go home.
Yes.
So he had to have
an
assessment.
It's very important, yes. Because, once again, the reason for that?
Yes, safety.
That's your ticket to ride.
Yes, yeah.
Now, there are a couple of things you need to understand about an ACAT assessment, and the first one is that this is a voluntary system. So if a person who the family or the doctor or the manager of the village thinks needs to be assessed, if that person doesn't agree, it's all over.
Mm.
So that's the first thing you need to understand, is the assessment is voluntary. Secondly,
without
the assessment, you won't get a place. And secondly, just because you've been assessed, that doesn't mean to say you have to do anything. Mm. It's still your personal choice what happens next. So there are. I do know in the village there's a bit of a fear factor in the village, Glen, and I'm sure it's in Stuart's village and other where. People are fearful that if they get assessed in the village and I know about it, Peter's going to say, OK, you've been assessed, therefore it's time to leave.
Mm. Oh, I've heard those rumours, Peter.
Clearly that's not the case.
Powerful Peter.
Oh yeah.
So as we said of a staff.
Yeah. But rumour mills are alive and well in villages, let me tell you.
They are.
So anyway, so we've discussed on other programs about home care, and we're a very big supporter of home care, as is the village Baxter, as are most villages. So a lot of people are now living in villages much longer than they ever used to because of home care supporting them at home.
Mm.
Anyway, so that's the ACAT process.
But before you leave the ACAT process, Peter, that it's important that someone be with you during that assessment
who knows you.
Mm. Because people will always say, of course I can, Peter was the ACAT person and he says, do I cook my meals? Of course I do.
Yes.
And I clean my house perfectly.
Yeah.
And I had personal experience of that because my mum and dad, who lived in the village Glen, we went through that process with them. And my sister and I, for the very reason Stuart just said, were at the meeting, and the interviewer was asking mum and dad questions about those sort of, lifestyle issues.
Mm.
And my sister and I had to interrupt a couple of times and say, actually, mum, that's just not quite right.
And funnily enough, my mum, when she was being assessed, I was there.
Mm.
And mum says, yes, she can still cook. To which I said, mum, you haven't cooked in years. Mum's brother, who's in the village, in the unit just up from mum when mum was alive, he used to do the cooking towards the end.
Mm.
And how can you say this, mum, that you're doing the cooking when you're not?
Yeah, because they want to.
Want to present
that's
better.
That's right. My father said he could cook using the microwave, but he neglected to say that he was microwaving things for 40 minutes instead of 4 seconds.
Yes.
So three microwaves on.
It hasn't... And so it's really important that whoever's doing the assessment finds out the true competency or otherwise of your skills.
Yep.
They will watch someone walk and look at their gait, how they will stop, how they'll pick something up, their eyesight. It's quite a good assessment if people are honest about their deficits and where they need help.
Yes.
But what happens after I get my ACAT?
Well, once you have...
They've told me I've got a ticket.
You've got a ticket to ride. So I said the very minimum level is clearly the respite. And then the second one is home care, where you can be assessed for a level 1, 2, 3, or 4 package. And the final one is permanent residential care.
Mm.
And each one of those appear on the form. So around about 4 to 6 weeks after being assessed, you'll get a letter in the mail telling you where you sit.
4 to 6 weeks?
Yes, I thought. Is it longer now?
Oh, well, you must have influence. I think the important thing is that the ACAS, while the ACAT team, when they've assessed you, they will probably give you a nod or a wink on the side.
A heads up.
A heads up.
Yeah.
And then it's sent, they have the obligation to send that into my aged care.
Yep.
And this will be the person's first introduction to this particular organisation, and they will end up determining when you will receive a service.
Yeah.
And part of a problem is that you do not know how long they will take to actually respond to you. They will determine the priority. So if you are a relatively low-need person, then you may not hear from them for many months, and yet you're sitting at home waiting. So there's frustration number one. Frustration number two will come about by moving perhaps to our second step, our second point.
Which is the income and assets test.
That would be the second stumbling block.
And yes, and what that's all about is, clearly I said before that the government have appointed regional hospitals as their agents to on a needs basis to determine should you get care.
Mm.
Once that's been determined, because of a user pays strategy, you now have to tell Centrelink what your income and your assets are. Now, if it's for home care, it's just income. If it's for residential aged care, it's income and assets.
Yes.
And you have to fill in about a 34-page document.
How many pages was that?
34, I thought it was.
My heavens.
Is it more?
Yes. No, 34 is not a bad guess.
34.
It's there or thereabouts.
And it is a difficult form to fill in.
It's very difficult.
It's a follow the bouncing ball type form.
Yeah.
And if you answer it no to this, go to question so-and-so. I say to our clients, when you get this form, read it a couple of times and don't have a pen or pencil anywhere near anything, because you can answer the questions wrongly and whatever you say becomes the record.
Yes.
So you've got to have and we say to all of our clients at this stage of that process, if you've got any assets or income over and above your pension or your family home, very good idea to get independent financial advice who actually understands the nuances of the Aged Care Act so that you can, I'm not suggesting you don't tell the truth, but you have to put the information in that represents you doing the best you can for yourself within the current government guidelines.
Yes.
And reality is in the modern world that you cannot hide your assets. I mean, with data matching through the variety of Commonwealth systems, be it through tax, be it through super, be it through banks, be it through shares. I mean, the government knows an awful lot about you before you even try and do business with them.
Absolutely.
And we've recently had a case where one of our potential people had gifted money over the last couple of years of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Well, the Commonwealth know that. By movements in the bank accounts. And just by the mere fact that that person had gifted that money away, which was their choice.
So the person doing the gifting here is a potential resident, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
A potential aged care resident.
Okay.
So he's going through the asset and income test. The fact that the person gave that money away still meant that it was going to be included as an asset under their control, even though they'd given it away.
Wow. Mm.
Because in any particular year, you can only give away $10,000.
Yes.
And beyond that, it is still considered to be your money. Now, the trap for people in doing that is that you will be paying an income-tested fee and an asset-tested fee in by way of an accommodation or RAD
or
a charge.
Mm.
Yet you may not have the money to now do that. And that leaves a person in a very impoverished position, because where are they going to go? Which provider can actually afford not to impose those fees? Because the government's going to reduce subsidy by the amount of what the fees should be. And that is very difficult. And that then becomes more complex. Have you ever taken a guarantor over a fee?
Yes.
And so the government has now made provision, for someone else to guarantee fees or pay fees on your behalf, or a bond on your behalf, or a RAD on your behalf. One of the interesting aspects of that, so if Peter kindly comes and pays my RAD for me because he's been a lifetime friend and and I've fallen on hard times, and he's got plenty of money working down at, in my retirement sector. If he decides to help me and either guarantee my bond or
and pay, I would every day.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But the interesting thing is, if I leave or pass away, that actually becomes assets of my estate. And Peter's actually been very charitable by
giving it all away.
Exactly. And that is a really bizarre set of circumstances. So doing the financials is a very important step in the process. You know,
and a crucial part of that, Stuart, is I said it in my little bit then, a financial planner who knows the nuances.
Yes.
Mm.
There are a lot of financial planners and they're all very good at what they do. There are specialist areas and this is one of them. So for the listeners, it's very important you ask the question of your financial planner, have you got expertise in this sector? And if you haven't, please recommend someone who has.
Yes.
And do the guidelines change regularly?
They do.
Yes. Yeah, so
every time
have
they
to
do a federal government budget?
They change,
they
do change.
They ramp it up a bit.
Wow.
And it becomes more onerous each time.
Goodness.
You know, we need to acknowledge that there are so many calls on the public purse through our taxation system that it is not unreasonable to expect people who have the wherewithal to contribute something towards their cost. But it would be nice to have a simpler process. So, you know, having your assessment is the first step in the chain. Then your financials is the second step in the chain. And whatever you do, do not try to defraud the Commonwealth. That would not have a good outcome for anybody. What about my power of attorney who's acting on my behalf?
Mm. Yes. That's the next one, isn't it?
Well,
yes.
What we're going to do, gentlemen, we're going to take a break, remind everybody that they're listening to The Age Stage. We've got to pay the bills here at RPPFM. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to find out more, the five things, or three to go, in what you need to know when considering moving into government-funded or aged care services. We'll be right back.
This is 98.7, 98.3 RPPFM.
Alrighty, are you all okay? Big day, boys. Brownie.
Yes, coach.
Keep up that rich, full-bodied smoothness, son.
Yes, coach.
Lager. Here, coach.
Good boy.
I know you're new to the team, but you're so crisp and refreshing. Great light straw colour too, son. Keep it up.
Thanks, coach.
Pale, IPA, you're the strength and consistency we need on this team.
Mornington Peninsula Brewery love football as much as they love making world-class beer. That's why they're sponsors of local footy. This season, treat yourself to a round of beer and pizza at the Brewery Bar. Mornington Peninsula Brewery, 72 Watt Road, Mornington.
Station sponsor.
Hi, Pete here from the Mornington Telstra Business Centre, and I'd like you to meet some of my team. This is Scott.
Hey.
Daniel.
G'day.
And Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Now, whether you need tech support, new products, or simply some advice on the best gadgets for your business, our team of experts can offer you tips, tricks, and answers to your questions. So drop by for a chat today, or if you'd prefer, give us a call on 1300 My Business. That's 1300 692 874 to book an appointment, or we can come to you.
Want to plan a cruise holiday?
Somerville Travel's passion is cruising.
Jackie and Rochelle can help you plan your dream holiday to a number of destinations around the world.
As a member of Cruise Co, the girls can offer you exclusive cruises, access to over 50 cruise lines worldwide.
And great fly, cruise and stay holidays to some of the world's most popular destinations.
Call Jackie or Rochelle at Somerville Travel and Cruise today and start planning your next holiday. 0359 77 5433.
Station sponsor.
You're listening to The Age Stage on RPPFM 98.7, 98.3 across the Mornington Peninsula. Great to have your company, a program that looks at the issues and matters affecting older Australians. We're here with Stuart and Peter from the Village Glen and Village Baxter. They're having a look today at the things we need to know when considering moving into government-funded aged care services. We've been through two of those. You're getting some sensational advice. And Stuart, we're down to point number three.
I might have a power of attorney now, and Peter, what advice are you going to give my power of attorney?
Is that a loaded question? No.
I've reached a stage where, you've been so generous to support me financially that I figured I should appoint you as my power of attorney.
Financial or medical?
Oh, I'd probably trust you with both.
Yes, right.
So, I can't do it myself. I'm a bit confused. I don't know what to do. Yep. I've looked at that wretched 53-page form and...
yep.
and thought, that's too hard for me. And clearly Kathy was not competent to do it either. So you're here to help me.
Yes, and it is very important for any, well, for all of us, it's important as we get older to have financial powers of attorney, I think, and medical as well. And they are separate forms. And the state government have fairly recently changed the legislation. So you used to be able to go down to the news agents, didn't you, Stuart, and get a form and fill it in, and that would do. That's correct. No longer the case.
No,
there's
yep.
a multi-paged form that there now is. Suffices yeah. what used to yeah. be on a one page.
And it's a huge responsibility too.
It is.
So it's something that's really got to be considered carefully, I think.
It is, and I've got some personal experience of this as well. I suppose we all have personal experiences. But if you're going to choose financial powers of attorney, clearly a family is a good place to start. And my advice to anyone would be have more than one. You need more than one. Because I just recently found out that and if there is only one and that person, for whatever reason, can no longer be your power of attorney, and if you have cognitive impairment like dementia,
mm-hmm.
That person can't handball to someone else. You have to go back to the source being the person you're acting for,
yeah.
to get them to appoint someone else. Now, mm-hmm. if they have some form of dementia, that can't happen. Then you've got to go through the
Guardianship board or VCAT.
Oh, wow.
And you need to stay away from there.
Yes.
Unless there is no alternative.
Yeah.
So it's important to have more than one power of attorney.
And it needs to be someone whom I trusted. Clearly I trust you because yeah. I'm giving you
yep.
my power.
Yep.
I know that you're not going to do me in.
Yeah.
And
the good thing about
unkindly.
Having two in the family as well is and they share and... And I suppose in some respects that's a bit of a safeguard. We hear a fair bit in recent times about elder abuse,
mm.
and there's like it's been in the press quite a bit of late mm. where family are taking advantage of older people,
yes.
Which is just you know really upsetting for me.
But that yeah. of course, is mm. not new.
No.
Yeah.
But it is the hidden form of abuse
mm.
that... that no one quite knows how to deal with.
Mm.
I know the Office of Seniors is currently preparing something about financial abuse amongst families to just try and make that topic more visible in the community. Mm. We've been concerned over the years for a couple of families who we thought they may not be doing the right thing by their parents. But having made inquiries, it is a very difficult topic that mm. people are reluctant to become involved in.
Yes.
And so you end up just, mm. you know, conceding defeat that what will be, and that's really sad.
So some years ago I had a really sad occasion, as Stuart just said, where one of our residents in our residential care had appointed her daughter, who lived in Sydney, as her power of attorney, and... on a magic day, the daily care fee stopped being paid because the pension was going into the bank account run by the daughter.
Mm.
And it got to a point where the debt was tens of thousands of dollars. Now, as we as operators, there's a term in our sector called security of tenure. Now, what that actually means is when people join you, it's their choice what happens next. So if for whatever reason they're not paying their bills, well, that's not their problem, it's your problem.
Mm.
In this case, this power of attorney who we knew and were dealing with had developed a gambling habit.
Oh, God.
And mm-hmm. all mum's pension was going in the pokies. Oh. Now, that never got resolved. The resident passed away and we just had a debt.
Really?
Which is really sad.
Yeah.
Really mm. sad. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. it is important that... Yeah. you consider who is going to be capable to be your power of attorney and be prepared to look after your interests
mm.
because you are entrusting that person with your financial arrangements and also your medical and living arrangements.
Mm.
And you need to cater for all three of those particular topics.
Yeah, I had a personal experience being my father's power of attorney, medical and financial, and the medical side... was difficult when he had a stroke and was in hospital, and I was asked, as his medical power of attorney, did I want him resuscitated or not? And so I was the only one in the family that was the medical power of attorney. It was
a huge segue.
That is an excellent segue
to number four, because number four is advanced care planning.
Yes.
Now, advanced care planning deals with that issue. So we, and I'm sure Stuart's the same in his residential care, when residents join us, we sit with them and their families and we ask them to tell us what if, what are their instructions with regards of resuscitation, with regards of lots of things. So the advanced care plan is a very important document.
Absolutely.
Because it was text everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was listening to a speaker some weeks ago who suggested that in completing an advanced care plan, you need to be very specific. You cannot simply say, in his view, that I don't want to be resuscitated under any circumstances. You need to say, in the event that I am no longer capable of feeding myself or whatever it might be, whatever that circumstance is, when that particular event happens, then I want to be, you know, just left alone and let nature take its course.
Made comfortable.
But made comfortable. But apparently in his experience, and he's fairly well researched in this matter, you cannot make just a broad generalisation, because the courts are loath to determine something that is that broad.
Mm.
But with a specific event and a specific cause leading to an outcome, the courts have upheld that every time. Because the issue always becomes for ambulance officers or doctors or anything else that, you know, we can resuscitate you and you will have a good quality of life, or if we give you this treatment, you know, you will still have a productive life, as, you know, in a relative phrase.
Mm.
And so it creates some anxiety for those professions who think the family are making the wrong decision by no resus.
Yeah,
and in my experience, when you're interviewing people for the first time, it's a difficult conversation to have.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's not something that was ever mentioned to me, except standing there at the Alfred Hospital at the moment, and it was horrendous.
Yeah. And families need to come to terms. This is one of the more fundamental things that families need to do together.
Mm, that's right.
Is, you know, how do you want to see your parents when they become very frail? You know, what do you want to see happen? And you need to be confident enough to have a mature discussion about it. I've certainly had that discussion with my son and daughter about what I want. I mean, I do not want to be, you know, on a tube being fed for my last days on the planet. That is not my view of a quality of life. You know, people just need to have that. And it is difficult to be confronted by that question,
yes.
Paula.
Yes.
As a justice of the peace, I witness a number of documents, both outside of work and at work, and I would always encourage families to go and sit down and talk about it, because you need to think about these aspects to put it in your medical. We would suggest you do both. Put in your medical power of attorney, document it there, and also complete an advanced care plan. Really important.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree.
And that probably leads us then to our final thing. So we've been through the ACAT, we've done our financials, we've appointed our power of attorney and got some other documents ready.
Our wills.
Wills, yes. Yep. We need to prepare our will and make certain all those documents are in order. Then we get around to finally choosing our aged care place. Where are we going to go? I know you're going to say, go to the village, Glen. And looking after my interests, you'd be saying, this is the place to be. And, you know, it is a difficult decision as to which aged care facility should you choose. Mm. if Peter is my my advocate, my power of attorney, I would expect him to go around and visit some aged care facility to see which one felt nice, that he knew that, you know, this would meet my particular needs. It was warm, it was inviting, had some pets for companionship, and all those sorts of things that, you know, just to make people comfortable, to feel like home. It should not feel like
An institution.
Mm. It needs to feel like home. Mm. And I'm certain that Peter would have done that for me.
I would have. I will.
You will? Oh, gee. I'm not signing any papers when I leave here. It's really important that people consider what is their view of home for their loved one, their spouse, whatever the situation may be. It may not necessarily be the closest. My son or daughter might be living the other side of Melbourne. Should I be relocated closer to be with them?
Mm.
So there's a range of things that you need to consider in it.
You raise a really good point there, Stuart. I have this a lot, where the Village Glen, as we know, is on the Southern Peninsula, so a lot of our residents and their families are not Southern Peninsula people. Their parents have retired to the peninsula. And we do have that discussion at the village where people have reached a stage of their lives where they need to go into residential care. And I do make the point to the families that in my experience, a lot of people have moved their parents to be near a facility near them for their convenience and don't consider the needs of their parents. We all live in communities, and it's very important that people stay part of their community. So I get the fact that it's handy to be closer to family, but sometimes moving closer to family, families get moved in their jobs.
Yeah,
and they do.
And people can be moved to a facility in an area that's not part of their community, and then their families, for whatever reasons, don't visit because they've been moved or whatever, and then people are isolated. Mm. So part of the conversations families need to have is, are mum and dad in a community here? Will that community support them in their new house, being their aged care facility? And if so, we need to find a place that suits mum and dad so their friends can visit.
Yeah, that's true, Peter, because my father, he was born and bred in St Kilda, and went back there later in his life after my mother had passed away, and wanted to stay in that area. All his friends were in that area. They could get on the tram and come, and he ended up at Coppin, Freemasons.
Yep. Yes.
So I could come and visit him. But myself and my two sisters all lived on the peninsula.
So it was reversed.
Yes. And it was very difficult sometimes. But it's what he wanted. And so what he wanted was what he was going to have.
Yeah, and that was home for him.
It was home. Mm. Yes. And,
And, you know, that's all we could ever ask for is, you know, whatever I choose to call home is something that will be respected.
Mm.
Exactly. He could hear the trams clicking by and things like that, and that he liked that, and that's fine.
Yeah, sense of movement, sense of life.
Yes, yeah.
So I think they're the five things we really wanted to draw out today, and that's based on a couple of illustrations that we've had of recent times, of just some of the pitfalls that people can find trying to navigate through the modern aged care process.
Mm.
Perplexing for some, and we thank you, gentlemen, very much indeed for your time today. Stuart, thank you very much indeed. Stuart Shaw from the Village Baxter, and also Peter Nilsson from the Village Glen. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks,
you
Paul.
Are tuned up to the Age Stage. And next week, I believe that we've got a special in process. Stuart, it looks like we might be visited by a special visitor.
We're really thrilled that the Minister for Aged Care, Mr. Ken Wyatt, will be down on the peninsula. We're having a seminar at the village, which we spoke about last week. And we'll be then crossing to a live taping, or live, what do you call that?
Just a discussion.
Outside broadcast?
That's a phrase I'm looking for.
You guys are getting good with this.
Oh, gee.
I'm loving this.
An outside broadcast.
OB.
Yeah,
OB.
The OB band will be down.
Don't forget your cans.
Oh, yeah.
But, in, But a special to look forward to next week when we have indeed the Minister for Aged Care joining us on the Age Stage next week. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about pets and older Aussies.
A great topic. Pets.
Ah, yes, the Age Stage across the Mornington Peninsula. Great to have your company on 98.7, 98.3. Of course, it is made possible by our friends at the Village Baxter, the Village Glen, and Encore Living for that rural alternative. Pets and older Australians, an intriguing subject and one that the RSPCA has been thinking about quite a lot recently. In fact, they've got a new program. It's called Poops. And to tell us all about it, Matt French from the RSPCA. Matt, welcome to the Age Stage.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Matt, first of all, this notion, poops, what is it, what does it mean, and what's it all about?
Yeah, it's a catchy name. It means pets of older person, and essentially it's a program that we've had in place for some time now that seeks to keep people and their pets united for as long as possible. So many older Australians have pets that mean so much to them. They've had them usually for quite a long period of time, and those pets, you know, mean so very much to people that there's no need for them to be separated. If we can intervene, if we can help, if we can provide some support, some assistance, we have caseworkers that go and visit people that are on our client list and just make sure they're okay, clip toenails, give the dog a bath, take it for a walk, check on the cat, give it some medication if that's what it needs, assist with transport to and from the vet clinic if necessary, and most importantly, if a person has to go to hospital or seek assistance and they've got nobody to look after their animal, often older Australians won't contact a doctor or a hospital to get that help because they've just got nobody to look after their animal. So they go without themselves. So we provide temporary boarding for clients who need to go and be looked after for a period of time.
I tell you what, Matt, you guys, you must really love your animals, and of course you do, working for the organisation that you do. Is this a national program that you rolled out?
This one, this program's been running in New South Wales for over a decade now. So it's been quite popular, and there's been an uptake of other states around the country, so there are other RSPCAs who are looking into this area of work. We also run domestic violence programs and homelessness programs as well. So we definitely, as a society, recognise that amazing, important connection that people have with their animals and that they mean so much to us in so many ways. For people who are going through trauma or people who have lost their life partner or are experiencing some kind of significant issue in their lives, these animals mean so much, and they're very often the reason people get out of bed, keep going, keep moving, Matt, the motivation to keep going.
Yeah. Matt, I noticed when my father was in nursing home that every Tuesday someone would come in with a different, like a dog or a different type of dog, and the response was incredible from the, you know, the residents. It was quite amazing to watch them, you know, sort of pat them, and you could see, you know, how much calmer they were.
Oh, absolutely. All the research indicates that having that connection, having that physical connection, just having a cat on your lap and patting it reduces
yes.
blood pressure.
Yes.
And it connects people often to earlier memories of pets that they had when they were younger.
Mm.
And particularly for people who are either socially isolated or, you know, don't have family or friends for some reason, having that animal, it's the most important and positive social bond that they have.
That's right.
It means so much.
It actually balances the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. It everybody knows when an animal walks into a room or when somebody sees a dog, it's, you know, children, very young children,
yeah,
see an animal, they're happy. There's
yes.
a reaction that we have. It's an innate reaction that we have to want to look after and care for these.
Yes. And we notice in some sort of facilities and nursing homes that residents are encouraged to have them themselves. Have you noticed that at all?
Yeah, we do. We do work with a number of facilities because unfortunately we end up sometimes with animals who come into our care and have to stay in our care because a person goes into long-term residency or aged care where the facility doesn't allow or can't cater for or for some reason can't have the animal. And it is one of the most traumatic separations that you can see.
Mm,
the
yes.
person who's had that, you know, chihuahua for 10, 12, 13 years of its life, and all of a sudden they have to be separated. So the entire point of the program is to keep them together for as long as possible. And as I said, if we can be involved in keeping those, you know, the human and the animal, it's just as important for both sides. The animal doesn't want to lose its person either. The animal's probably never, ever had another owner, often with an older client. So
That's
important to work, you know, from both ends.
Yes, very important.
Tell me, Matt, how do we go about finding out whether this service is provided to us down here? I guess we just ring up our local RSPCA, do we?
Yep, absolutely. And contact local RSPCA and have a conversation and encourage them. We have worked with South Australian RSPCA, West Australia, Queensland. There's a growing understanding, you know, from welfare groups, not just RSPCA, but animal welfare groups and advocates all over the country, that the relationship we have with animals just goes far beyond just mere companions or just, you know, something to have around, and particularly, as I was saying, if you're socially isolated. So definitely encourage you to contact local RSPCA, contact local council, and start talking about these programs.
And you, of course, the RSPCA, are you reliant totally on donations these days, Matt?
Yeah, in New South Wales, we're reliant completely on donations and the support of the public. We do receive a small state grant of about $400,000 every year, which goes towards our inspectorate, but our operating cost is around about $50 million a year.
So how would our listeners get involved and show some sort of solidarity with what you're trying to do and what you are doing?
Oh, so there's many ways. Obviously, you know, donations are always very, very welcome, but there's lots of other ways people can be involved. Volunteering their time at a local shelter or a facility, becoming a foster carer is a fantastic way. A lot of our animals, particularly with our aged care clients who end up coming into our temporary care for a short time while their owner seeks assistance, the shelter is not always the greatest place for them because it's very stressful. There's lots of other animals there. They don't know anybody. And if we can rehome or temporarily home an animal with a foster carer, so it's in a home environment with a family, with people, so much better for the animal, so much less stressful for everybody, and often the client feels better knowing that animal is with a family or spending that time. So being a foster carer, can't understate just how important and the impact that can have getting animals out.
Indeed, you know, earlier on in the program we were talking to Stuart and Peter about the five things that people should consider before they move into government-funded aged care services. And given the bond, as you were mentioning before, between people and their animals, maybe this should be a consideration as well. If you're going to make a decision about a retirement village or a retirement residence, you should maybe be thinking about what their animal policy is as well.
Yeah, look, and the question never, you know, I guess developers and policymakers and people who run centres obviously have to think about human welfare and what's, you know, hygienic and what's manageable. I guess it's opening, encouraging developers and planners, not just in that aged care facility, but in all housing, to open their minds to the thought and the understanding of how important animals are and the various roles they play in our lives. Dogs can be difficult to have in small facilities if they can't get the exercise they need, but there's lots of smaller animals. Cats, in particular, can provide that companionship for a person. And it's definitely something to think about.
I think it's very valuable for the residents. You know, that experience and that contact. I think it's really valuable for them.
Absolutely.
And are you seeing a greater tolerance about animals in this residential environment these days, Matt? Are we getting more sophisticated now thinking about it?
Yeah, definitely. We get approached by developing groups these days who want to talk to us about how they can make new housing estates more animal friendly, whether they can include things like cat parks, so cat enclosures in new developments so that people can have cats that, you know, don't then go out and prey on wildlife that get hit by cars and you know, can be responsibly managed. And definitely society as a whole is definitely moving towards a space where so many more questions are being asked, and the level, as I was saying, that level of understanding of how important they are is much, much deeper now as society becomes more educated. You know, it wasn't that long ago nobody knew what a battery cage was for a chicken.
Yeah,
everybody now talks about eggs.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, these are the things, and these changes only happen because people ask questions, look into it. And very often because celebrities get a hold of the message and spread it as well. But it is that greater social understanding and desire, I guess, to move animal welfare forward as well.
Good on you, Matt. Thank you very much indeed. We'll follow Poops very closely here on The Aged Age, and we thank you very much indeed for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Good on you, Matt. Matt French from the RSPCA, and do please, as you are making decisions about your life, where to from here, and perhaps those nearest and dearest to you, the role and the place that pets play in any consideration about future options is probably very, very important. This is The Aged Age across the Mornington Peninsula. Hearing there from a lovely old octogenarian, dear old Mick Jagger, getting on a little bit in age these days, but still being able to pump out a few good licks in a rock and roll world. This is The Aged Age across the Mornington Peninsula. I'm Brendan Telfer. Alongside me is Paula Dunn. And Paula, great that you could join us here today on The Age Stage.
Thank you, Brendan. It's good to be here.
We've been learning a lot today, the five things that we need to know before considering moving into government-funded aged care services, of course. Then we were speaking to the RSPCA about POOPS and their program for pets and older Australians. And now we've got Lucy Berry from Animals Australia on the line talking about older pets and homes. And Lucy, welcome to The Age Stage. Great that you could join us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful. So, Lucy, we've been hearing about the very important role that pets and animals can play in our lives. And I guess you're coming from it from a slightly different perspective. You would concede that point, I'm sure. But you would also suggest that maybe we can do something for older pets as well.
Yes, thanks, Brendan. Certainly, I think science and our communities are pretty clear on the fact that pets and dogs bring many benefits to our lives, both social and health benefits. We know that dogs help people be active, to get outside and enjoy the fresh air. And plus, of course, they offer that unconditional love and companionship. So one issue is that, as you've noted, when people go into aged care homes, or quite often pets end up homeless in that situation, and they're often senior pets. So I wanted just to touch on the fact that there are plenty of wonderful senior animals, dogs in particular, waiting for homes around Australia. There are lots of reasons that someone might want to adopt a senior pet in particular, in that older dogs are often calmer than younger dogs or puppies, and they often require less exercise. And they're often already, someone's put in the love and hard work with them, so they're already house trained and maybe even have basic commands and other training.
That's right. And I mean, you know, the tragedy of maybe some of these older pets is that perhaps they did belong to an older Australian, and for circumstances or where they have to live or how they have to live, they're giving them up. And it's your job to try and place these older pets as well.
Certainly, yes. So there are rescue groups and shelters all around the country who are really focusing on trying to support both the people who are who are in this unfortunate circumstance and the animals. So there's a really wonderful website called petrescues.com.au, and you can even search by senior on that site. So the animals come up with profiles, and the website connects you directly with the shelters and rescue group.
Lucy, in your experience, what sort of trauma, if any, are you seeing in some of these animals, like dogs, for instance, if they've had a 12 or a 14-year relationship with an owner that has suddenly changed, it's stopped, and they find themselves in your hands? Do you see trauma or some sort of anxiety in the animals?
Well, I mean, as you've noted, animals form really strong bonds with their families, their human families. And older dogs who end up in shelters and with rescue groups often are disoriented and unsure of what's happening. So when they are adopted into a new loving forever home, often they just completely blossom, and they're able to really fall on their feet in those situations.
Hi, Lucy. Do they settle in really well in that sort of situation? Do they don't, as Brendan was saying, you know, about them becoming anxious, but you said that they blossom. And is that unusual for them to settle in like that after being with someone else for, you know, 10, 12 years?
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously, all dogs are individuals, like people, so it will depend on their history and their personality.
Yep.
Personally, I know a couple of people who have adopted older dogs, and they've just been these complete older gentlemen animals who really wanted a loving home, and to sort of be in the living room and watch the family go by and hang out with the kids. And,
yeah.
So I think it, you know, like bringing any animal into your home, if you make sure that that specific animal is a good match for your lifestyle, then you set yourself up and that animal up for the best chances of success.
Yes, and Lucy, what happens to the older animals who aren't adopted? Like, where do they go? What's their future?
Sadly, senior dogs are often the last to be chosen for adoption at shelters and the first to be euthanized.
Mm.
So that's probably really just because people simply don't realize all of the wonderful benefits of adopting an older dog.
Yes.
Yeah, so and when you do welcome an older dog into your family through adoption, you're not only saving their life, but you're saving the life of the animal who can now take their spot in that shelter. So
yeah,
it's really a win-win.
Yeah, good point.
So, Lucy, if we do want to get involved and we do want to make an effort to look at an older animal, bring an older animal into our life, how do we get in touch with you guys? Where are you? What do we do?
Sure. So, as I mentioned, there's a great website called petrescue.com.au. Wherever you are in Australia, you'll see listings of wonderful adoptable animals, dogs and other companion animals on Pet Rescue, and you can search via senior as a filter. And then we also, at Animals Australia, we have some more information on our website at animalsaustralia.org/senior-dog.
Lucy Berry, thank you very much indeed. Lucy Berry of Animals Australia, thank you very much for joining us on the Age Stage today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Well, Paula, just like that, another hour of the Age Stage has gone. Thank you very much indeed. So as we were saying with Stuart just before he took off, a big program next week.
Huge.
We do hope to have the Minister in with us on a special broadcast. And, of course, the broadcast made possible by the very generous support of our friends at the Village Baxter and the Village Glen and Encore Living for that rural alternative.
Mm, we'll have lots of questions to ask the Minister, won't we?
We will indeed. Mm. That's next week on the Age Stage. Hope you can join us for that one. On behalf of Paula Dunn, I'm Brendan Telfer. Have a great week. See you next time.